o'clock. The work session will now come to order. Our first measure of business is the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, followed by a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Next item of business is a planning director comments.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any comments at this time. I would just like to welcome our newest member from the Urbana District, Petalesa.
Thank you.
You are planning commission. It's her first work session.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item is public comment. Anyone wishing to come forward to speak about anything, please come forward to your microphone. State your name and address, please. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll end the public comment session, and we will start with our work session discussion of the capital improvement plans for years 2019 through 2023.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to say that we're going to do this in a similar fashion as the past 2 or 3 years. We're going to have this work session is devoted to giving the agencies a chance to discuss their projects. We'll go through the list, and then the next work session will actually rank the projects, and then hopefully have a public hearing by the December meeting. And we have been asked that it's need the time and consideration of their time is to let the school system go first.
Okay. I would like to read from the comprehensive plan about the capital improvements program before we start. The CIP is a 5-year plan that tries to anticipate all new or replaceable capital needs. A capital project is defined as a generally non-reoccurring asset, both tangible buildings, vehicles, land, etc., and intangibles, software, easements, licenses, studies, services that exceed as established dollar amount, which used to be $20,000, and we can't remember whether it's 35, I thought it was 50, $50,000. Projects to be included in the annual budget are identified in the first year of the plan, and all other capital projects are planned for later years. An important aspect of the CIP is the projected operational and maintenance cost of a proposed project. And if the school system wants to come forward, we're letting them go first.
Good evening. How are you all?
Well.
Thank you. My name is Don Striblin. I'm the transitioning executive director for the school system, with HR, operations, and student services. So I'm here tonight to present the CIP request. Is there a particular order that you want me to go in?
Let's go down the list as you see fit.
Go straight down from there.
Okay. The first request is for, computer instructional technology and infrastructure replacement. This request is based on the technology replacement cycle that is recommended. The funding will cover the cost to implement the annual recurring replacement cycle for, obviously, the school's instructional technology. What this will entail is student class and cart laptops, upgrade of desktop laptops, Chromebook carts, and smart boards. and this is at a total of $300,000.
Question is, I've asked the same question over and over, but the fact is, why is something like this not actually in the school's budget? This is a reoccurring expense, which, according to the comprehensive plan and the capital improvements plan, shouldn't be something that should be in the capital improvements plan. I also see that there's $200,000 left from last year.
I believe it was, we're still working. Are you talking about leftover?
Well, it says prior funds, $200,000.
That's what was funded last year.
I thought it was funded
$300,000.
So we requested three and then we were funded two?
Yes,
sir.
Well, one of the reasons I asked that, and because we are citizen planners, I'm going to ask questions that devolve planning and sometimes about citizens also, because I saw that the school system had a surplus of over $1 million this year. And my thinking, since I'm really in favor of technology,
yes, sir,
that we should make it show that we've had this money available by putting it in the CIP. You never know what it is, so if you put it in the budget, know it's there. So that's a.
Can I go on the policy part?
Yes.
So it's actually just the opposite. If you put it in the CIP, you absolutely know it's there and it can only be spent for that purpose. And that's the only guarantee that the Board of Supervisors has, that funds get spent for that purpose. And the discussion from a couple years ago, clearly in your point, that they normally wouldn't put expendable items like a laptop in a capital improvements line. This is a pool of money that guarantees an expenditure line for that function. If it goes in the school's budget, there is no guarantee whatsoever that they will have the ability to spend it on that, nor would the Board of Supervisors have any say on whether it was spent for that function. So that's the reason for the transition. And the good part about CIP is you have absolute visibility every single year and the dollars carry forward. And so if you have, like in the CRM, if you have some excess left in 1 year, you may not need to fund it quite as much the following year, so we can track that so we'll know what their expenditures are. But it guarantees it's spent on that and that only. So
yeah, but it is contradictory to what
it clearly is, but you also have some contradictions in regular CIP too, because there's the policy states that vehicles, even vehicles under $50,000, are included in the CIP, even though everything else has a $50,000 threshold. And it was really just because it's a big block, single item, and it was for visibility purposes rather than just budgeting. If we devolve sedans down in airbase operating budget, we would kind of lose the tail on that, and that's why it was kept in there, even though it was a lot lower dollar value.
Yeah. I'm very much in favor of technology, but the fact is, I just when I read the what the CIP is supposed to be, it always bothered me.
Right, and the new policy states it a little differently, not in the comprehensive plan, but in the county's policy. And so the good part about this is that you have continued absolute visibility and it will be spent on that function. Unless it's not spent, then it can be turned back into fund balance, but it has to be spent on those issues and those issues alone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other
questions regarding that request? Okay. Underground fuel tank replacement. Now, this we have been started to work collaboratively with the county with regards to Mr. Wills, our maintenance supervisor. We have four different tanks that we're requesting to remove and install a new above ground tank. Those four tanks are approximately, $50,000 apiece to remove. Now, it's not something that is, it's not mandated at this time, but at some point, what we're working with the county on, and Mr. Stevens, we're working with Mr. Stevens to do some initial site-based information, gathering of information. Again, not mandated, but at some point the EPA is probably going to move forward and say that these tanks need to be moved above ground. We put it in to make sure that you guys knew, obviously of planning, we did put it in for this year, but we were going to request it to go ahead and get ahead of the curve. Obviously, we know it's not necessarily a priority, I'm just going to be very honest with you, but we wanted to make sure that you were aware of it. Any questions on those?
Any opportunity for help from DEQ with that?
Sir?
Any opportunity for help with DEQ from the cost?
That is something we're looking at. So Mr. Stevens and Mr. Wills and I will take a look at that to see if we get any grants or any additional funding. But I will find that out as well. Yes, ma'am?
The $50,000 for each of the four tanks, is that to remove the underground tanks only or to remove them and replace them?
Remove and replace. Yes, ma'am. All right. Carriesbrook Elementary roof and HVAC replacement. With this request, we are requesting 1.3 million yen. And what that will entail is the roof at Carriesbrook Elementary. Having been at Carriesbrook, and while it was the middle school before becoming Carriesbrook, we had issues with the roof. I know that we resurfaced it twice during 10 years that I was there. We still have the same leaks and the same issues that we are having. Now, why that happened after two replacements, obviously when you get up and you try and reseal the air vents, the HVAC, the handlers, all of those things. If you've ever had any water issues, water finds a way, and it always finds a way somewhere. So if you stop it at one place, I've been up in the ceiling actually with some of the spray foam, stop that leak, but it'll find another way. So basically, what is happening is we want to go ahead and take care of it. We have transitioned that over 5 years ago to an elementary school. While we are doing that, if we're on the roof and they're doing the tar and the rock and the gravel, it would be a good time to look at replacing the HVAC as well. I know there was a question at the initial meeting of why we did not do that while we were doing the middle school. It just wasn't, my understanding was, the funding we used strictly for the middle school, and this was going to be a separate funding project. So basically what that is broken down to is you have roof, you have the HVAC equipment, the controls, and the install. You're looking at the cafeteria and the gym, and then the school. So you break it up into segments.
One quick question.
Yes, sir.
You said $1.3 million in our sheets, and the screen says 1.6, which is correct.
All right, well, let's see. What I have is 5 and 350, so 850 and 450, 9 be 1.3. Now, I'm sorry that your sheet says that. Is that a replacement on ours? I think what we may have done is there was a request to go back and review those figures from the initial, and I apologize that I did not update those for you. I went back and talked to Mr. Wills and to look at his quotes and what it was. We found that there was a $300,000 difference, and so we adjusted that, and I apologize for not getting that into you and updating your records.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I will say that, obviously being my first time here, the process will be much smoother next year.
No problem.
I appreciate that, but I wanted you to know that this process will be much smoother. I'm very interested after this meeting, after all of the planning goes through, whatever happens at the end, I'm very interested in starting our CIP meetings so that this process will be much smoother, much more efficient.
We've all gone through the first time. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Any additional questions on that one? All right, we'll move on to 42. Abrams Building Renovation. This has been on the CIP for several years. And a couple of different things with Abrams. We've installed new lighting. We have done some informal upgrades. I know that, and while I pull this up on the screen, it's at $2.8 million. Working with the county, and again, part of that transition and part of that efficiency is we're going to look to, starting next year, look to be more of a, what the Planning Commission is, what a CIP should be. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. What would we like to do this year? And not just drop $2.8 million for the whole thing, okay? I know that when I have to do it at my house, there are certain things that I do in stages. So we want to look more at a stage process for this. With that being said, there are a couple different ones, and I'm not going to waste any more time. We've already started in that process of thinking and reflecting back. We've got a process that we're going to present. Obviously, Abrams for us right now is not what I would consider a priority, but it will be. You will see it again on the CIP request.
Okay, it kind of ranked as a number two, so.
It was ranked as a number two, but again, after talk with, again, there was a lot of discussion. I'm a big believer in collaborating with the county. It was a two initially. I would like to see, and I'll just, again, I would like to see whether we are going to do anything or whether we aren't. I think that we'll have more collaboration with the county and the school system if we give you guys a real five-year plan and not just a lump sum. What are we going to do the first year? That's how much we need. But it also has to be very strategic, meaning you can't do the roof until you do this. You can't do the bathrooms until you do this. It needs to be a lot more strategic. That's my feeling.
Main computer system of school systems. Still in Abrams?
Yes, sir, in the basement. And we did some of the asbestos abatement, so we have gotten that out down there. It's a good building. It's still structurally sound, but it's going to take a lot of money to get it where we need over that process. So, again, a 2 that went to a 3, not a priority for us, but we will have something better for you in the upcoming year. All right, the next one is elementary playground equipment.
Skip the middle school track.
Oh, sorry about that. 43. My check marks are getting a little too quick. Savannah Middle School track and court resurfacing. The initial conversation that we had, again, for $75,000, obviously when we moved to the new high school, obviously the old high school was turned into a middle school. Not as many sporting events, obviously with not the degree of the athletic schedule. What we are seeing now is that the community is using both the field, the track, and when you have outside sources, and we work with those community members to clean up trash, to keep it aesthetically pleasing, but when they can't take care of the actual upkeep, I believe the cycle for tracks is 8 years. The bleachers are still in good shape. This would take care of relining. There's some things on the side where if you're a runner, you want those sides to be built up, no different than in your yard or with a road. So that $75,000 would assist with the track. The field, there was some discussion regarding the drainage on the football field. My understanding is that the drain towards the, I don't know whether it's the north or the south, I would assume it's closer to the south end field. is clogged. Now, whether that is a break in the line or a clog itself, we still need to look into that, so we're going to look into that. As far as the tennis courts, we are working currently with the middle school PTO, and they are looking to incorporate some type of playground atmosphere. We do have fifth graders there, so you consider them upper elementary and not necessarily middle school students. We are working with them as well. What they do would be a supplement to what we want to do. We want to make sure that it's safe first. This is also something that could be used by the entire school, all three levels, about 900, 870 students. So that's why this request is in. Any questions? Now to the elementary playground equipment. This is for $200,000. It is a priority three. The reason it is a priority three is because we are working right now. Mr. Wills and I just got off the phone with two different vendors for the ability to upgrade. The initial request is because we have students coming in and you have to have the ADA certified. You're talking about access. You're not just talking about access. Well, if you have access, then you're ADA compliant. But you have to have access, you have to have a certain amount, a certain type of mulch, a certain type of ground cover. And then you also have to have equipment that can be used by both disabled and non-disabled children together, not by themselves. Playground, if you think about it, a playground is a time where your kids come together. And you don't want to isolate a student just because they're in a chair or they do not have the same mobility that another child may have. That was the initial request. We put it as a three because when we did the initial request, we were in the infancy stage of finding a separate funding source. That's why it's a request three or a priority three at this time. Again, this was another one that we were looking at, is if you do see it again, if the Planning Commission does see this come up again, that it will be a cycle. Year one, year two, year three, year four. It will be a very detailed description of what you want to see or what is going to happen, and it'll be very clear as to where we start and where we end. All right, next one. Yes, sir.
Going back, you were talking about children with disabilities to
yes,
a certain
sir.
Extent. Have they ever installed any type of the swings where that you could actually put the wheelchair in or anything of that nature?
Not to my knowledge. The one that we do have that we are installing, we're in the process of installing, it looks like a huge sled, almost like a race car seat. You can't put the actual seat, the chair, in there, but that's one that I know that I've seen that is in the process. Some of the, what we have requested, and I'm talking with finance now, it's called an Ultra Glide. Altaglide, and basically there is a ramp, probably a 12-foot by 4-foot ramp that leads up to a ramp that moves maybe 12 to 16 inches where a chair can go in, you put the brakes on, all children, you have a bench, but you can, it basically takes care of everything, and it's fun. I mean, that's what the playground should be, that's what recess should be.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Number 45, Central and West Central bathroom remodeling. Again, this is a priority three for $1 million. Basically, this would be a complete gut. You would bring everything out and completely install fixtures, stalls, commodes, paper towel holders. And this would also be getting up to ADA requirements as well. That's not the priority of this one, but basically an adjustment, an update of the facility. So sinks, fixtures, urinals, tile, paint, and replumbing. These numbers, now, again, this is a priority three, and again, as I said, and I don't mean to be redundant, but as we move forward in the next few years in terms of the cycle and the planning, these numbers were based on the work that was recently done at Fluvanna Middle School. When this becomes a two or a one, we will have a much more detailed description of what that will entail so that there will be no questions in terms of the goal. All right, number 46, middle school annex gymnasium floor. This was another discussion with the county and Parks and Rec, where there is an opportunity for us to work collaboratively. I apologize.
I see this is out in 2020. Is that still the plan?
That is why. Okay, that is why it's 2020. Yes, sir. And that gives us time to work with the county, work with Parks and Rec, that I believe you guys have. Aaron, you have one or two?
One
gym that you guys want
to
resurface? So what we're going to do is work with Parks and Rec to see if we can get a dual deal or a combo deal. Obviously, getting the equipment out there, getting the manpower, people power out there, is going to give us a more fiscally advantageous for us as a county and as a school system. Similar to number 47, we are requesting for a paving cycle, or for actually paving. There are several other county projects that may be able to, we can combine those with ours to get a better price. This is where we will really see a price difference when you're talking about paving and getting the equipment there. So once we get the equipment there, it's really getting them there, showing them where they need to be, and we can do both a joint effort with what we need the school to do, bus garage, Fluvanna Middle, the high school is taken care of, and the school board office, along with Abrams. So those would be some of the projects that we would be looking at. As far as the county goes, I know there's several different places that you guys are looking at. If we could do a joint venture, and again, that would be cycled up in terms of letting you guys know exactly what that was. Any questions on the paving or the resurfacing? All right, number 49, school buses. And again, we talked a little bit about that in terms of the vehicles. We are trying to get, and I just did a presentation for the school board this morning to give them a brief update. We'll do a little more tomorrow night at the school board meeting in terms of we're trying to get our buses on the recommended 15-year cycle. So, and not to bore you with the numbers, but we have 38 current buses in our fleet that are from 1986 to 2002. Now, I'm not saying 35 of them are 1986. I'm saying one or two of them is. I know one of them is. But you take all those years, we still don't have a fleet that is the recommended 15-year cycle for the safety of our kids. We are requesting the 564, and it seems like it's a continual request. That is because until we get to that point, it's going to take about 5 or 6 years to get to that point. Now, when we go 5 or 6 years, those buses that are 2009s right now, they'll be 4 or 5 years older. So that is a continual cycle that we will see. Any questions? All right.
I have a quick question.
Yes, ma'am.
I noticed in the out years, the prices on the buses have remained constant over 5 years. Is there an expectation that those would go up over time?
Well, we increased, I believe the last 3 or 4 years, we put it in at $564. I think if I remember correctly, we did a percentage, and I believe it was either a 4 to 6% increase for those years, and I kept it constant because I don't know. Once we get to that point, we will reach out to our vendors to get a specific price. I would say it's pretty close. I would say it's very close.
Yes, absolutely. And one note about that, in the main budget itself, when you see the full budget sheet, the CIP section of it also gets escalated. We put a 2 or 3% escalation factor in the out years. So even though we don't ask departments to budget operating supplies or capital things with an inflation factor, because we use an inflation factor automatically for the out years. In the regular fiscal year, we want real numbers, but in the out years, we use an inflation factor built in.
Very helpful.
Thank you. And then, I believe, number 50 is the last one. Student transport facilities vehicles. And again, this is another cycle request, but basically what we are seeing is more of our students, a couple different facets, more of our students are requiring individual transportation for a number of different reasons. The other aspect of this is our maintenance fleet with snow. I know right now that we have, I believe it's a 1998 Ford, and it's gotten a lot of great miles and it's done a lot of good things, but when you push snow, when you push ice, when you push the salt, it eats your body out. So what we're doing with any new vehicles that we do, we're getting an undercoating, we're trying to prepare, we're trying to add length and life to our vehicles along with our maintenance. Our bus garage is wonderful, but these are basically a cycle that will keep us in that cycle to keep us updated for both students and staff. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Who do you want to go next?
I might suggest fire and rescue.
Thank you. I'm John Lai. I'm the president of the Savannah Fire Rescue Association, and this is actually my second time here in front of you. So, first one on the list is the CPR assist devices. You may remember that this was on our request last year, and it didn't get funded. It got pushed back a year. These are devices that can help with CPR. When you have a two-person crew, as you may or may not know, during the day and night now, there are two stations that are staffed. One is Station 1 in Paul Myers, clear staff, and which is supplemented by volunteers at times, and Lake Monticello, which is the other one, is staffed by volunteers. The career staff are two-person crews, a driver and a medic. If you have to transport someone doing CPR, you need another person. These are basically mechanical versions that do that. We are requesting them actually for Lake Monticello at this time because the operational medical director that runs the career staff is not in favor of them. Our medical director is a little more technologically receptive and is actually very enthusiastic about us trying them. We're in the process of getting demos to decide which brand we're going to get. There's a couple of different models out there, but that's what this request is for. So, any questions on those?
These devices. devices been used in surrounding jurisdictions with
yes,
success?
Yes, ma'am. Several of the other jurisdictions. And we have members that are career staff in other jurisdictions and have used some of these. So we have, some of our members have opinions as to which device to choose, and which is why we want to get demos of them so we can get some consensus among our membership. But yes, quite a few of the counties around here do use them already.
So these five are for the lake?
So these are for the lake at this point, yes, sir. With the idea being that if they're successful and well received, that the career staff may or may not want to go on board as well at some point in the future.
So that's one per transport unit?
So it's one per transport unit plus one on the response car. So it's a total of five eventually. The response vehicle is one that we use to assist at times. So if it's one of our members using it, we can go out to the county and help them with that, which we do on occasion.
Is there potential to maybe spread it out? You get three this year and two the following year?
That's a possibility, sure. Yeah, absolutely. So that's something that could be done. It could be split. It does drop it below the $50,000 when we do it that way.
Right.
But yeah, sure. We could put it on our first and second due, for example, first, and then add the other two later on. Absolutely. Okay. Anything else? Okay. So the next one on the list is the vehicle apparatus. We have, and if you look at, I'll actually sort of talk about the two together. There's vehicle apparatus in Lake Monticello. You may remember our discussion last year. In the past, the apparatus replacements for Lake Monticello have been in the operational budget rather than the CIP, which never made any sense. And it was for historical reasons because of the way things were titled. Because Lake Monticello is not a county entity, it's a separate private entity. And so we talked to the attorney, we figured out that what we can do is we can either co-title or buy them and lease them to the county, and that way they can satisfy the requirements for the CIP, which is why they're now in the CIP, which I think is where they belong, and I think it makes a lot more sense. So there are three vehicles that are in here, a fire truck, an ambulance, and a water rescue vehicle. The National Fire Protection Association recommends a 20-year cycle for fire apparatus replacement. The engine that's in here, engine 30, is actually more than 20 years old at this point, but it was moved back a little bit to keep the funding, trying to even out the funding. I've now got a spreadsheet out for 20 years on vehicle apparatus and trying to keep them from having two fire trucks in the same year, for example, because of the price. So we're going to try and keep that at a level, not so many peaks and valleys. There's an ambulance in there for the County Rescue Squad. This is ambulance 49. You may recall that the county has recently bought two ambulances. This is now their third new ambulance. It is one that they've had mechanical difficulties at times at, so they're looking to replace it. It is their third ambulance, but when any of the other two goes down, then they need to have this one in service as well. This one has been the most problematic of the three that they have. The other two are newer. We have a replacement schedule of 8 years for ambulances because they get a lot more use than the fire trucks. They go a lot more often. And then the third one is the water rescue vehicle. And this is replacing a 1991 vehicle, so it's well over the 20 years. And it's getting fairly worn out. It's going to be used to carry full boats and carry equipment for water and technical rescue. Questions on those?
No, we need to try to speed up because we're only going to have about 20 more minutes left
okay.
for the work session tonight. We've got a lot of them.
Okay. So. The other two are the heart monitor replacement is more for your information. That's a couple years out. It is Philips's, we use Philips heart monitors for doing 12 EKGs in the field. Philips is, the ones that we are currently using are at end of life. They are going to have to be replaced in a couple years. We're also requesting monitors for the fire apparatus because we want them to be compatible with whatever we get. If a first responder shows up with an AED and puts pads on a patient, we need to be able to put them on the heart monitors as well. So we're requesting to do both of them at the same time. The final one then, so unless there's questions on that, that's a couple years ago. You'll have plenty of time to ask me about that next year. The final one is the self-contained breathing apparatus, or SCBAs. This is a county-wide project for all the fire companies to replace all the apparatus so that they're consistent and standardized throughout the county. So a firefighter from Lake Monticello, if they're assisting out at Kent Store, and there's a problem, they know, they've been trained on and know how to use the SCBAs. It's really a safety issue. These are also at end of life, so that they need to be done. It is a very large project, so we've split it into 2 years. We need to standardize it so that there's not a model change. So we're splitting it into 2 years, and we'll purchase them at the end of 1 year so that we can split the invoice between the two, is the plan, by in June of 1 year and July of the next year. Questions on that?
Any opportunity for an AFG grant?
Yes, we're actually looking at a safer grant at this point, so we are looking at the funding for that. The grant has not opened up yet, but as soon as it does, we're going to be looking at that, some funding for that. And I should mention that with the heart monitors, we'll be looking for RSAF grant funding for that as well to supplement it.
Are you looking for that? Also looking at the command module where you can monitor staff inside and also do the alerts to evacuate and all that?
Yeah, that's going to be part of the project as well, yes, sir. The new radios also have the Mayday buttons on them, which is helpful too. Further questions? Thank you very much for your time.
I think what we'll do is move to county services.
Start in 2020, so we don't need to discuss that too much. And then the combined admin services and school admin building is way out, and that still is going to need a lot of requirement, a lot of discussion, a lot of planning, and it's still kind of a pie in the sky dream, to be honest with you. We need a little bit of master plan out there, let's bring to turn, and some discussions regarding the county's future as far as how it plans to house the staff and others that need office space at the county. Other than that, I've just got some maintenance preserve and replacement, the vehicle, county vehicles. I'm asking to get fully funded this year. The last 3 or 4 years, it's either been cut completely or cut more in half or more. And I did develop a vehicle replacement plan, which we were sticking to for a couple of years, and starting to get the overall average age of our vehicles down to something manageable. And over the last couple of years, it's prepped back up. So we're trying to do a little catch up there. Are there any questions? No.
Good evening, how you doing? I'm here to do the capital improvement project for the Parks and Rec Department, Savannah County. So the first one I have is a playground expansion at Pleasant Grove. Currently there are no ADA accessible pieces of equipment on any county property, and it'd be nice to be able to have a piece of equipment or two that anybody in the county can use, no matter what your ability would be. So that's one of them. The number two for FY19 would be athletic field lighting. It'd be great to be able to get some lighting out of Pleasant Grove to be able to hold soccer tournaments or multi-use tournaments out on our soccer fields. That would be for next year. I have it split in 2 years, and then the following year would be at our baseball and softball field on the hill in Pleasant Grove for lighting.
How many lighted fields we have now?
Two. And they're at the Carriage Brook, none at the park. So we have a softball and a baseball at Carriage Brook.
Okay. I was thinking there was funding some years ago for lighting.
That's what we currently have, is for lighting.
We've asked a couple years.
Another thing that I'm asking for next year is a multi-purpose shelter to Pleasant Grove Park. We have a lot of uses for the rentals that we have out there now, and it'd be nice to be able to have another place where people can come and rent and enjoy our park. Near the current one. And so with the current ones in the back, the other one would be kind of beside it, and the idea is to put a bathroom, like a two-stall bathroom on the back, so it would serve as a bathroom facility for both the pole park.
Would
like
parking facilities be
it
shared?
It would still be staying parked in the grass across the way kind of thing. But yeah, it'd be shared. Well, across the street though, yeah. Where the old pole barn was that was torn down probably 3 years ago with the storm, it'd be across right with that. For 20, I got two new athletic fields. They've been planned in the master plan. They're supposed to be a Pleasant Grove Park adjacent to the two we currently have. I know when the school was being built, I think some dirt was being brought in and put back there to kind of start prepping for the fields, and there wasn't enough dirt to brought in. So that's the plan for that. And the other one I have is to light the fields up there once we get them, and to be able to use a little bit longer. It would help bring in tournaments, revenue, and stuff like that in the county if we could get some lights. And FY21, I've got the multi-generalization center, which is a rec center. Try to bring all of our buildings into one. Right now, Parks and Rec is pretty spread out throughout the county. It'd be nice to have a central location for all of our people. And it also be.
You think that will ever happen? This multi-generational thing has been on the
It's been
CIP
on there for a while.
For almost the whole time I've been on the Planning Commission. And I'm just,
I don't want to take it off because I think it'd be a great service to this community if we can find a way to get something like this for our community.
It is part of all those things that are part of the master plan approved by the Board of Supervisors about 8 years ago, I guess it was 7 years ago, when They're still there, placeholders in the building, so the board says they can offer the funding.
The other one I have for that would be basketball tennis courts out of Pleasant Grove Park. Currently, there are none. It'd be nice to be able to have our park where people can come and enjoy anything they want to, not just certain things. We have a basketball facility at behind Carysbrook outside, but it needs work to the blacktop and stuff. So it'd be great to have something at our main park that people can enjoy. In FY22, it's the outdoor swimming pool and pool house. Everybody wants a pool. It'd be great to have a community pool. We don't have a community pool that just anybody can go to in our community. So that's why that's on there. And the last thing is I have a spray park, a little spray pad kind of thing in FY23. I had a meeting with my RAB just before this meeting. They would want me to move maybe the spray park up a little bit in the CIP standards, maybe before the pool. But that's something we haven't discussed. So, and it kind of makes sense maybe to have a spray park before a pool, a little less maintenance, stuff like that. Is there any questions?
Those items have been also been in there.
They have been there for a while, yes. And I've tried to take some out. I tried to spread them out over a year instead of lump them all together. Some of them are lumped together in years. I tried to maybe take one or two, spread them out a couple years. Hopefully I could get maybe one or two funded each year and keep moving forward.
Do you think if we ever put the pool in, it could be self-sufficient where the county wouldn't be paying into it every year?
It's hard to make a pool self-sufficient. Possibly, but it's hard to do it.
Just a question.
I'm trying to give you a good answer. And it's hard to give a straight answer because pools are tricky.
Yeah.
Just like the pool
you always
have to put more water into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pools are tricky. Is there anything else I can help you with?
Thank you.
All right, thank you for your time.
I see the sheriff here. The only thing I see listed for the sheriff is some vehicles. I don't see anything at all across this noble line.
I'm trying to save taxpayers some money.
You're a good man.
We're only going to ask for what we really need. So what you see reflects the vehicles, our aging, oldest fleet we have, in the 2012 Chargers, and we've had three of them that are already gone. Out of service completely. We've had terrible results with the V6 engine. We'll never buy another. Transmissions. So we're at that lull after several years of just getting our 4 or 5 vehicles. We're in that pot where we need to get the big influx to keep our fleet in service. Our costs this year have skyrocketed on repairs on a lot of these. The oldest vehicle we have in our fleet that's still running every day is 191,000 miles. And now the age of the replaced Lotus is 114,000. It's way above the national standards for public safety vehicles. And we try to do the best we can to keep them in service and keep them running in top-notch shape. We've entered into a program where in the future for our investigators, we won't be going to the top-end fleet vehicles that are pursuit rated. Most investigators don't run code on the scene. They usually respond in a timely manner. So we kind of probably see what other agencies in the neighboring jurisdictions and we'll buy the used rental cars for them. It's probably about half the cost of outfitting a $40,000 vehicle that you see out on the road responding to calls. And that cost reflects the cameras as well as the radars and the other equipment that we need for vehicles that respond to crimes to be uniform in nature, which is also part of our accreditation process that we'll be working on this year.
Thank you.
That's all I have. If you have any other questions.
Mr. Chair, if you could give us a couple minutes, I'll have Mr. Siemens explain the new capital depreciation fund. That's the first top line on there. And explain the genesis of that, what it means, along with the capital reserve maintenance fund. You don't approve the items on the back of the sheet, but the items on the back sheet feed there, and we want you to understand that process.
process.
The current fiscal year, you see county capital depreciation fund and schools capital depreciation fund. This FY18 is the first budget year that we had that as a line. The intent there is to pull a lot of the routine and ongoing maintenance, repair, and replacement items from the CIP, yet still have a funding source for it. So the idea is for the capital depreciation fund to take care of our assets that have depreciated. In other words, repaving, painting buildings, putting roofs on buildings, things like that. We're working towards a plan where that would be funded with a certain amount of cash every year, and then the maintenance, repair, and replacement items that you see, well, they're on the back of that sheet. I don't know how far down they are on this page. Right here, these are funded from that lump sum of money that goes into the budget. That way, neither you or, to some extent, the Board of Supervisors need to be necessarily specifically concerned with, say, the roof on the community center, because you'll know that our facilities department has a roof replacement plan, estimating the general life of the roof. Then, separate from that, we will continue to have the capital reserve maintenance fund, which would be for items that, say, an HVAC system failed 5 or 6 years earlier than you predicted or thought it was, and it isn't in the MRR, or I'm sorry, the capital depreciation fund yet. That would be for specific instances to come forward to ask the board for additional money to take care of something that was unexpected, which was the original intent of the capital reserve maintenance fund to start with, but it had kind of morphed into a, well, gosh, we really need to do this, we need to do it this year kind of thing. But the whole idea of the capital depreciation fund is to take care of your depreciation. I mean, ideally, you'd be setting aside, say, 1 or 2% of the replacement value of all your assets each year into that fund. Now, I understand that's never going to happen. That fund will probably always be underfunded, but it does give us a source to begin taking care of things on a more cyclical basis instead of having to wait until something completely fails before we replace it. Did y'all have any questions about that? That's one reason why you didn't have me up here for a half an hour talking about secure storage in the basement of the admin building and things like that, because we intend to fund these items as we are able from that capital depreciation.
Thank you. We only have 2 minutes left in our work session, so I think that most of the things that needs to be covered has been covered tonight, and I think at our next meeting, we'll actually do the ranking.
It is Monday, November 6th, due to Election Day. We're meeting Monday, November 6th. The work session began at 6 p.m.
I see that's on the county site now. If it's no objection, we'll end our work session at this time. We'll pick up back up in approximately 2 minutes for our regular meeting.
It says recording. Just the screen's blank. Okay.
It's now 7:01. We will be opening our regular meeting for October 10th, 2017 of the Flu Vanna Planning Commission. At this time, the first item of business is Pledge of Allegiance and a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The next item is the minutes from the September 12, 2017 meeting. Does anybody, any of the commission have any comments about the notes, the minutes? Do I have a motion? I have a motion by Mr. Lagavecino to accept the minutes as written. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. It would be 3-0 and one abstaining because of the fact that she just, this is her first meeting. Okay. We'll move on to the public hearing of CMP 1703 Columbia Rezoning, and Mr. Robinson will be presenting this. And I do need to ask Mr. Payne a question. Since we did have the actual public hearing at our last meeting, do we reopen that public hearing?
I think you should, if you're going to have the public hearing, you should
have to. That's what I thought. I want to make sure.
Yes, sir.
There was an advertising issue with the adjoining counties that we corrected last month. We did re-advertise.
That was the reason it was not completed last time. It was an advertising issue. It really didn't affect the public. It affected only the abutting counties. But under the circumstances, I think the prudent thing would be going to take the comments.
So the adjoining counties have been notified?
Yes.
Correct. Okay. Thank you.
They have. Before I begin, I'm going to ask on some correspondence we received today. Thank you. R6 are going to be zoned agricultural, A1, with the exception of an industrial business here, which is proposed to be zoned I2. So these lots here are proposed to be zoned I2. Everything else, though, this green would be the A1. There's a parcel here, there's a little bit of VC showing. That parcel is connected to the parcel on the north side of I6, so that's why that's short. And then, so the pink area that runs along Route 6 is proposed to be zoned BC, which is business convenience. And then everything else north of that, which is primarily, if you're riding through there, is basically everything on top of the hill where the residential area is, which is proposed to zone that R4 residential. So in the packet, there was some correspondence included from a property owner. The correspondence that I gave you is from the same property owner. We received that today. What's in the packet is what we received following the last public hearing last month. The property owner states in that correspondence that his property has historically been commercial. And you can see here, that it lies basically within the residential area, and that's why we're proposing this on the R4. And just looking back at some of the old town zoning maps, I do not believe this property was ever zoned commercial. It was always been zoned residential until the town was dissolved. So that's just a little.
What is on that site right now?
I don't believe anything is on there.
Right on Route 6, his building is on Route 6.
Yeah.
To the DC.
Yeah. I think his building is somewhere right here.
But there's not a commercial.
There's not a
there right
commercial
now.
Use of the property. That's correct. So to just summarize, basically everything I stated earlier, everything south of Route 6 to be A1, with the exception of existing industrial business. Parcels 2 that are directly along Route 6 to be business convenience. Parcels north of Route 6 to be R4, that's a residential area on the hill, a couple of churches in that area as well. And then the Planning Commission, as part of this request, should consider how it does or does not align with the comprehensive plan. And that concludes the staff's presentation. A suggested motion is on the screen. I can try to answer any questions.
Anybody have any questions, Mr. Robinson? No, we've been working on this for quite a while now. If not, I will open the public hearing at this time. Anyone wishing to come forward to speak on this, come forward to the microphone, state your name and address. You will be limited to 3 minutes.
My name is Earl Morse. I live in Pensacola, Virginia, and I'm here representing St. Joseph's Church in Columbia. At last month's meeting, I raised the issue about the zoning for the town hall lot. And the letter that we received from the county does not identify the town lot as being residential. It's nowhere listed in the letter that we received. And by we, I mean the diocese who owns the property. So we still have the question of whether or not it's business like it has been over the last 100 years, or whether or not it's going to be included in part of St. Joseph's Church property. Another part to that question is, we're wondering whether or not you have any provisions for resolving any discrepancies as far as the surveys that you're going to do of the demolished property. I know we have concerns about a plat that was done for us in 2010 that does not agree with the information on the Favana County website as far as the property that is going to be demolished that joins our property. So we're wondering what provisions you have for resolving any discrepancies there, whether it's a problem for us or whether it's a problem for the county.
Chairman, would you like me to address the second topic?
Yes, sir.
At that time, I have a question. I don't have the surveys in front of me, but but the properties the county is acquiring are all being on the ground modern survey. They're almost finished at this point. I know the survey we're talking about. I know our surveyor has seen it and is considering that in connection with everything else in his surveys. So the tax maps shown on the website have lots of inaccuracies. So that you shouldn't really be very concerned about the tax maps as far as these acquisitions. The acquisitions are not being done by tax map, they're being done by on the ground survey.
Our main concern is that the new septic field that we put in bumps right up to that particular property. And so consequently, we're concerned that there may be some issues because of the location of our new septic field versus what the county thinks is their property. And so we just need to make sure there's some procedure that's going to be available for that issue to be resolved.
I don't know what you mean by procedure.
Well, I mean, if you say your property comes up into an area that is already on our plat that was done in 2010, then obviously we both can't own the same piece of property.
Well, our surveyor is aware of your survey. And I'm not aware that there's any conflict between the two. I can't tell you as I sit here because I don't have a problem.
Right.
But all I can say is that I know it's there. Now, obviously, there are questions about septic systems that are butt up on neighboring properties, but that's beyond the issue of where the property line is. Can I answer your question?
Not really, but as long as the survey for the adjoining property is made available to the church so that we can see firsthand whether it's our problem or whether it's your problem.
We don't have it yet. It was going to be finished. It wasn't finished because there were some instructions in the survey. Physical instructions he couldn't get to. We saw an email today from the surveyor that said that his weather permitting shouldn't be more than a couple of days before his work is finished.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Can I, before the next person comes back, Mr. Newman, did we look at that situation that this gentleman was talking about last week? And,
yes, I made a copy of the minutes.
That was an issue of whether it was advertised as commercial or residential.
Right.
And Mr. Newman checked it before the end of the last meeting and told you that the advertising was.
Yeah, so from the minutes and from the packet that we have, including from our memo that we mailed out, parcel 54A-1-61B is the town hall, or the lot that had the town hall, and that is proposed to be zoned business commercial, BC, not residential.
Okay, that's what I thought. I just wanted to clarify that.
Well, that answers one of our questions. Thank you.
Anyone else want to come forward? Please come forward, state your name and address.
Yes, sir. I'm R.T. Harry, and I'm not sure about this thing, whether it's working or not, but I think I'm going to speak loud enough that everybody in the room can hear me. My address is 467 Martin Kings Road, up on Martin Kings Road at the north end of the county. I have two concerns. Number one is lot 66 on the western end here that scheduled to be zoned business. Okay, as you can see, it crosses over Route 6. It's only a small sliver triangle there, and I would propose that you submit that to be a split zoning, the commercial on the north side and agricultural to go with Lot 82 on the south side. And the other concern was, I think I saw something in documentation that Lot number 10 on the very eastern end of the town was scheduled to be residential. I see on his map it's scheduled to be business. I don't have a problem with that, but I'd just like to make sure which one is right.
The map there is correct.
Okay, all right, that answers that one. How about the split zoning on lot 66?
I'll have to ask the planning department about that because I need to, somebody to actually point that out on the map for me, and so that we can actually see exactly what we're talking about. But that's all one lot, right?
Yes.
That's basically all one lot.
Split in half by Route 6.
Okay, so that's why it was, it's already one lot, so therefore it was zoned as one lot. See?
But there's no reason for it to have a different zoning south of Highway 6. It's too small to ever use for anything. It'll never conform to any of the requirements of offset, separate, separate, separate.
Is that lot zoned two different things, or is it all one?
It's currently that particular one in question, we have proposed to be zoned one in one PC. But it's currently split by Route 6.
But it's still one piece of property and zoned one thing. It's not a split zone.
Yes, currently. It's just the one proposed zone.
So it's all agricultural right now, right?
Right now it has
the
It's proposed to be business commercial. That piece of property.
But it doesn't make sense to me to do that. I mean, I don't understand what the problem is about split zoning.
The problem is, it's all one parcel. It is not two separate parcels. It's one parcel that was split by when Route 6 was put in. That's
but
something.
There's no benefit to anyone to have that southern portion zone business. You can't ever use it. It's too small. This isn't something that's never been done before. I mean, it's a common occurrence to have split zoning.
There are other parcels within the county that do have split zoning. If you might have a 10-acre parcel and it might be 4 acres business and 6 acres agricultural, there are occurrences within the county.
Yeah, it wouldn't be legally incorrect about north side being commercial, south side being agricultural. It's up to you what you think is more appropriate. And whether or not the south side can be used for commercial purposes, it may very well be useful for commercial purposes. It may, I'm making this up because I don't know whether the facts support this, but it wouldn't be unusual, for example, to have a commercial use on the north side which might be big enough, which had its parking lot on the south side, or something like that, or a septic system, or things like that. And I'm not suggesting that it's the only thing, but that's the kind of thing that could happen. So I think it's up to you which one you think is more appropriate. But Mr. Harry's question is not out of order.
Right, I understand that. I'm trying to. How much space are we talking about? That's on the smaller section that he said probably should be A1.
I don't know. I can see what we have on our GIS system. You don't have a vision survey.
Do we, would the planning department have any concerns about that?
One thing to keep in mind, Mr. Chairman, is that with order the proposed I-2, which will put considerable constraints on the potential development of I-2 due to bordering agricultural property to the board. That's one thing to keep in mind, that it could potentially affect that property.
Could that lot be subdivided and that portion on the south side sold to someone else? I don't know, because that would depend on dimensions and things like that. Assuming it can meet all the spatial requirements and parameters, it shouldn't be, couldn't be subdivided. That's it. These things that get split by roads raise a lot of fairly sophisticated questions, depending on what use is proposed and what it lends itself to. For example, if you want to put a septic system in there, does it perk? Things like that.
And one of the things that we talked about with you all in the past year was consistency on the corridors and how we want to see it developed
I assume Mr. Harry owns that property. As a suggestion, why not have the survey bring it back to us and let us see what we're talking about? Because right now we're just talking about a parcel in the abstract. We don't know the size of it. And then we can see how it looks in proportion to the other property.
Our GIS system shows it as being, as both parts, north and south, being half an acre combined.
And the adjacent property, the one that's yellowed out, or the one that's supposed to be yellowed, is one acre.
The original lots that you can see, most of those purple ones, on the north side of the city. The original survey had the lots as half an acre. So you can see that's a half an acre subject of what was taken by Route 6. I will tell you that split zoning does occasion some problems. For example, the Supreme Court has determined that if, for example, you put a commercial use on the north side and you want to put the sign or the parking or something like that on the south side, you couldn't do it if it was A1. Now, moreover, if you had an accessory use that you wanted to put on there and it was only A1, couldn't use that accessory use as accessory to the main use on the property to the south because it's a different parcel. I don't know a lot about that case from that lawsuit. But there's some sort of slippery things when you're talking about split zoning and split lots and accessory uses and things like that. So I don't think it's possible in the abstract to say zoning at A1 makes it more useful than that zoning at BC or vice versa. It would probably be possible to determine it depending on what you want to do with it, but it would require a lot more facts.
Good. Let me ask a question. If we go through with this zoning tonight, okay, and as is, okay. If we had the planning department look at it with Mr. Perry, could the planning department come back to us with a modification for that particular parcel? Well, I think probably what happened years ago when they moved Route 6 is how this happened.
Well, I can't tell you what the zoning was in town. Somewhere I have a copy of the old town zoning map. But as you know, the importance was lost along the way, and we determined what it was. And since the town's been abolished, charter's been revoked, the old zoning on it it doesn't exist, so there is no zoning on these properties. If you were to recommend to the Board of Supervisors what the staff has recommended to you, Mr. Harrison could always approach the Board of Supervisors. Do it his way rather than that way. And the same thing, if you wanted to agree with him tonight, it wouldn't be final because we'd go to the board. Finally, any zoning is always subject to rezoning. So if it came up that there was a particular use that was better served by being split, it would be an opportunity for Mr. Harry or whoever owned it to amend that zoning.
Thank you. We will just discuss a little bit here in a minute. Anyone else wishing to come forward, please come forward at this time, state your name and address.
Good evening. My name is Brenda Beasley, and I live on Dogwood Drive in the Columbia District. We own 8 lots in the town of Columbia, which are split in 2 by Stage Junction Road. Can I use this pointer to point out my lots? Thanks. Our 8 lots are these part of the floodplain park. These 2 parcels consist of 8 lots. the lower portion lying in the floodplain, the property in the floodplain is unusable for residential development. The R4 designation states that in order to build a house on any of the lots outside the floodplain, either of these criteria must be met. A minimum lot size of 15,000 square feet, approximately a third of an acre, is required for properties served by public water and sewer, or a minimum lot size of 2 acres is required for property not served by public water and sewer. Our lots at 21,900 square feet do meet the requirement for minimum lot size for a house served by public water and sewer, but our lots are not served by public water and sewer. Conversely, our lots are too small to meet the 2-acre minimum required for house served by private water and sewer. In October 2010, the town dedicated a new water system for Columbia that serves 27 homes and has a capacity to serve 100. It does not serve the area where our lots are located, and Columbia is not served by a public sewer system. Our lots are not suitable for any of these by right uses: a public park on private property, home occupation with no house, cluster development, multifamily residence, townhouse, group home on a half acre, kennel or greenhouse with no water, marina with no navigable water. In 1996, these lots were assessed in total at $6,600. By 2005, $20,000. By 2007, $50,000. By 2015, down to $35,000. And now in 2017, up again to $40,000. I understand assessments are adjusted periodically to align with the real estate market. However, if these lots are unsuited for any by right uses, I wonder how the market even applies to them. I have news articles and correspondence with the town council going back almost 20 years. In 2003, I requested to have the obsolete roads adjoining our property annexed to our lots, but was denied, even though the then mayor...
Can you speed it up? Because your tab's actually up.
I think the gentleman before me had quite a long time than I.
Part of that time was me speaking to the...
I agree. I understand. In 2003, I requested to have the obsolete roads adjoining our property annexed to our lots, but was denied, even though the then mayor had said it was allowable and a precedent had already been set. That same year, I requested to have our property connected to the new water system, but was dismissed. With all my efforts, I now try to picture how our lots, in others' hands, might benefit the community. Perhaps a cell tower, public park, affordable housing by Habitat for Humanity. The 8 lots together comprise 4 acres. I would love to finally see this property be of some real benefit to the community.
Thank you. So all the lots there are not served by public water.
No.
I had read articles in the paper about Columbia that was thinking that would.
Aqua Virginia provides the water there.
But it only to. She's saying it's only.
I think
served.
The town actually owned the water system. Aqua Virginia provided the service.
So.
I think that's right.
Who owns this?
County.
The county owns them.
I think the county.
Aqua
owns it? Okay.
So,
correct.
The Diocese of Richmond owns the property that the well is on, the tank. They have a lease. The county has a lease for 99 years to use the property, but it belongs to the diocese.
Does her concerns about the fact of what these properties can be used for concern the planning department with them being what they can be used for and being zoned R4?
Well, I think
conceivably, I mean, that's more obvious analysis. I mean, I don't know whether it would actually meet the criteria for variance. If it can't be used for anything, then it would certainly be a good case for a variance. What makes this a little unusual is that these are contiguous lots, and they're 4 acres in total. So with a little property line adjustment, possibly abandoning a couple of streets, that might not even be necessary. But if you did that, then you'd end up with a 4-acre parcel, which would meet all the criteria, wouldn't need public utilities, and would be sufficient, assuming there's appropriate area for septic system and whatnot out of the floodplain.
So in other words, a boundary adjustment could be done.
We experienced a similar situation in Dinwiddie County with West Petersburg, where the lots were, there were multiple tiny lots, and about 100, and combined their parcels to make it buildable under the current zoning ordinance.
You know, there's nothing really unusual about that. In days of yore, a lot of subdivisions were very small lots, which were never intended to be developed individually. It was intended to be marketed and be sold in 3 or 4 at a time, and the property would be developed in one piece. Columbia has always had the problem of what do you do with things other than the building, septic system, the well, and things like that. And that's what you're confronted with. The problem is, there's no zoning in Fluvanna County that would allow residential use on these properties without solving the water and sewer problem at this size. Unless, for example, you combine them, maybe the 1 4-acre parcel. 1 4-acre parcel, I think, would be, you know, speaking conceptually, but I don't see why it couldn't be done.
If I may, the R4 zoning permits cluster development, which in this case, by combining various properties, you can deal with both floodplain issues and the issues of the small properties and still be able to develop under cluster development. So it
that,
does give you
that floodplain could be under cluster development, that floodplain could be used as part of the open space.
What I'm telling you is that this doesn't impress me as being as hopeless as it might seem on the surface. But again, it's going to depend on a lot of factors that we don't know. You know, the town of Columbia was developed in the early 19th century. Those lot lines were obviously arbitrary. So how they work out in practice is, you know, it's a question you'd have to look at it in detail. But I will say that zoning anything else isn't going to help.
I agree. Thank you. Anyone else wishing to come forward at this time, please come forward. State your name and address. You'll be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one else coming forward, we will end the public hearing at this time. Do we have any discussion, any concerns, any questions about my thing is the fact that we've been working on this for months, and the fact that this is basically the best that we in the planning department can come up with. There's going to be problems with any type of zoning, but I believe that the planning department has done the best job possible, considering the fact that there was no real zoning or anything for us to go by. So, and then county, Columbia voted to turn this over to the county.
While you think about that, there is one, I do need to correct one thing, and that is the one aspect of the zoning ordinance that does apply in the form of town is the floodplain.
Questions. Okay, if not.
I was getting ready to say, do you think anything would
That's my personal opinion. Because I see the fact that that property was divided because the state wanted to put that highway through there, and that highway's been moved, and that's at different times and so forth like that. I think part of it was redone during the flood of 69 or 72.
I know we've had some trouble finding exactly where the tanks are.
Okay, if there's no other discussion, do I have a motion?
I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of CMP 1703, ordinance to amend the Fluvanna County zoning map block to establish county zoning districts of all parcels within the limits of the county zoning.
I have a motion by Mr. Longacino. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 4-0 and 1 absent. And I need to make a correction probably to our earlier, when we did the minutes, we should have had 3 in favor, 1 abstain, and 1 absent. Thank you. Okay, the next items of business is site development plans. We have 2 tonight. First one is SDP 1707 Greenberries.
Good evening. This is a site development plan request to establish approximately 8,000 square foot building and associated parking for a light manufacturing operation with respect to just under 2 acres of tax map 5, section 24, parcel 6. Parcel is zoned as I-1 Industrial Limited, and adjacent properties are zoned I-2, which is Industrial General, and B-1, Business General. It's location within the county. It's at the Zion Station Industrial Corp. This is the location of the parcel in question. Parcel zoned I-1. Surrounding properties are zoned I-1, I-2, and B-C. This is the Lafayette School. This is what the proposed entrance would be right here. And then this is a potential access point if the site is graded. This is the sketch plan. So again, the entrance will be right through here. You can loop around the building, structures here, and there's parking at the exterior of that loop. And the second potential location entrance would be right here. And that's only feasible though the site is thoroughly graded. This is for a coffee bean roasting facility, training center, and offices for Greenberries. It's a light manufacturing use, which is allowed by right in I-1. The use is compatible with our Zion Community Planning Area goals as defined within the comprehensive plan. The applicant is requesting a sidewalk waiver. Staff recommends approval as other lots within the area have a waiver. You can see from the picture here, there are no other sidewalks surrounding this property. So conclusion, this is a sketch plan for light manufacturing use. Appears to broadly meet the requirements of our zoning ordinance. They do need to increase the number of handicap spaces that they have, and there's just a few other minor things, such as showing where they're going to have bollards placed around an underground fuel tank. That's requested by our fire chief and the technical review committee, and we'll make sure that that's implemented on the final plan. So the final site plan will comply with all aspects of our zoning ordinance, and staff recommends approval of the site development plan 1707, subject to the 3 conditions. And then I have the 2 motions. The first is for the sketch plan, and the second is for the sidewalk.
What does the planning department think that the sidewalk waiver is something that is reasonable, and the fact that it could be a sidewalk to nowhere?
Yes, that's why, because we've approved other parcels, other site development plans in the same complex with an approved sidewalk waiver for the same reason that this entire area is designed before that part of the ordinance kicked in. It would just be the sidewalk to nowhere to put it.
Okay, you did mention that they had to have 1 more handicap
space. Yes, 1 more handicap parking space, as well as
bollards
for the underground fuel tank.
I just have a quick question. There seems to be a bit of a pinch
VDOT did their review. They didn't have any questions at the technical review committee. We haven't gotten official comments from them. At that point, when they reviewed the plans, they didn't seem to have any issues with it. But one of the conditions is that in order for this to be approved, VDOT has to approve.
And in other zonings and so forth that we've done, 22 feet is actually what the fire department normally requires. So I remember that from another project that I won't go into. Anyone have any other questions for Mr. Newman? Would the applicant like to say anything?
Yes, hi, my name is Sean Simmons. I actually live over East Jackshire Road in Louisa, although I'm a former resident of Kent Store, so the way I'm coming back. No, mostly just to answer any questions you have. We're excited to move the business. We're over in Albron by the airport right now, and this will cut my commute down to 12 minutes from an hour and a half. I'm pretty excited about that. And bring some business back to this area, so I think we're pretty excited to do it. And just see if you have any questions for me.
Does anybody have any questions from the applicant?
Are you looking at any potential for retail operations in the county?
Not on this property, but if Science Crossroads keeps growing, yeah, maybe. We'll keep our eyes on it. So we're our facility is really two things. It's our corporate offices, our training facility, because we have stores all over the world. And so we bring people from all over the world in for training and stuff. So this facility really is very specific to that. So there is one slight change. As he mentioned, there is some discussion with the property owner to actually take a substantial amount of dirt off the top of our property, about 6 feet, because he needs to fill in some other areas on the property, which is something I know nothing about. But by lowering my lot, that does make that second entrance much more feasible, because right now you're staring at a wall of dirt. So that's something that's being discussed on his side of the ledger.
Is that something that we should address now, or is that
I don't think so, because I think
I'm talking about Mr. Newman right now, or at final put in front of him. Final site plan.
I believe we're going to Roger Black, Erosion and Sediment Control, he would do his review. VDOT, again, if they're going to use this as a second entrance, VDOT will do their review as well. They were made aware of this at the TRC.
Okay.
From my standpoint, I don't see any issue with it.
It won't change any of the layout. It just drops us. So,
thank you.
Sure. Any other questions?
Anybody have any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anybody else have any discussion? This piece of property, any concerns or okay, if not, do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
I move to approve SDP 17.07, a sketch plan to establish an approximate 8,000 square foot building and associated parking for a light manufacturing operation with respect to 1.095 acres of tax map 5, section 24, parcel 6, subject to the three conditions listed in the staff report.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Johnson. Do I have a second? Have a second by Ms. Codalesa, if I'm pronouncing that right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 4-0 and 1 absent. Thank you.
Yeah, the sidewalk was on the city as well.
Oh, okay. Okay, do we have a motion on the sidewalk waiver?
I'll continue on with that. I move to approve a sidewalk waiver to SDP 17.07, a sketch plan to establish an approximate 8,000 square foot building and associated parking point, light manufacturing operation with respect to 1.095 acres of tax map 5, section 24, parcel 6, pursuant to County Code 22-23, 22-23-6, 0.68.
Okay. I have a motion by Mr. Johnson to approve the sidewalk waiver. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Mr. Magazzino seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 4-0, one absent. Thank you. The next item is SDP 1708, JRWA. Mr. Robinson, will we bring that?
All right, good evening again, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. I'm going to give a brief presentation for site development plan SDP 1708. This is a request for a sketch plan approval to construct a raw water intake and pump station, specifically on tax map 61A4A, which is zone A1 and located with the rural preservation planning area. And as you'll see, the surrounding parcels and the surrounding area is also zone A1. This is a map to show the overall route of the James River water project, which is basically the drawing water from the James just south of Columbia, taking up the eastern part of the county. Well, it will cross over into Louisa County to a new plant there. And you should recall that this was approved through a previous special use permit in 2016. So the subject parcel would specifically contain the proposed pump station. So just to get your bearings here, here's the parcel located along the James River. It's in between, and this right here is just known as 1-4. You can see it's proximate to there. And the former town of Columbia is just north there, and then this is the Rybank River. So the site is located between the two rivers. And you can see that it, along with the surrounding parcels in the surrounding area, is on A1. And then this is an aerial image to show that basically there's no development in this area currently. Joining parcels for the most part are wooded. And the subject parcel contains some vegetation. The pump station will be generally wanting in this area. And you may recall when the special use permit was being reviewed, there was some renderings of what they anticipate the proposed pump station to look like. So as far as impacting views to the surrounding area, but mainly from across the river, would probably have the most visible view of this pump station. So those renderings there just represent what it may look like in the summertime, and then what it would look like in the fall. Of course, in the fall, it would be a little more visible if it was off the trees. And then this is the applicant's sketch plan, just to get your bearings here. It's shifted a little bit north. The direction north is going this way. The James River is here. And this is the pump station. Gravel road that will come into the site and go around the pump station. And then the raw water intake here in the river. So the site plan, which has been referred to as Project 1, involves basically three things. 1A is the construction of the subsurface water intake in the river. 1B is the construction of the pumping station, and then 1C is construction of the water line from the pumping station to Route 6. Route 6 is where we'll connect with the Louisa line and then carry on from there into Louisa. As you saw from the previous sketch, there are no parking areas or anything else proposed on the site other than the pumping station. So to conclude, this is a sketch plan request for a raw water intake and pump station. This project will be used to meet the requirements of the zoning ordinance. If approved, then the final site plan would need to be reviewed and approved. Staff recommends approval of SDP 1708 subject to the conditions listed in the staff report. So that concludes my presentation. The suggested motion is on the screen. I can attempt to answer any questions you might have, and I believe the applicant is present this evening as well.
Have any questions, Mr. Robinson? Would the applicant like to say anything?
My name is Wes Sennings. I'm the project engineer, project manager of the Timmons Group in this project. I just want to introduce myself to Sam Lasker here and answer your question.
Anybody have any questions for the applicant? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to add that this proposal subject is, as Mr. Robinson said, this special use permit that was approved back in 2016. Conditions of those will apply. I mean, this is a slight change of the location, but those conditions have not changed.
The other thing is, this is a facility that's shown on conference plan. You don't have to have separate approval.
Project 2, just for reference purposes, that's the LCWA pipeline project that's going up through the Columbia District.
But this part of it is the JRWA, which is
JRWA, which is a
joint ownership venture between Nevada and Louisiana. Okay. Do I have any discussion about this? Any other questions? If not, do I have a motion?
Move to approve SDP 1708, a sketch plan request to construct a raw water intake and pump station with respect to 2.1 acres of tax map 61, section A, parcel 4A, subject to the conditions listed in the staff.
Okay. I have a motion by Ms. Cotalesa. Do I have a second?
Yes, sir.
I have a second by Mr. Legacino. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 4-0 and one absent. I don't think there's any other business on the agenda. Right now we will open up the second public comment section. Anyone wishing to come forward to speak anything about any of the county items, please come forward, state your name and address, and we'll be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we will end this second public comment section at this time. And if there's no objections.
One more item, Mr. Chairman. I just want to reiterate that our meeting next month is on Monday, November 6th. It's not on Tuesday due to Election Day. Same place, same time, just like that.
Monday the 6th. And that's now on the site, on the county site.
Yes.
The November meeting and the December meeting, neither one were listed on the county site.
Off the county site, we announced that on.
So I actually call it the data. If there's no objections, we will adjourn at this time at 7:57.